By the time we've gotten to Luke chapter 17, Jesus is approaching the end of his ministry. He's coming closer and closer with every chapter to Jerusalem, where he's going to fulfill the purpose of his life. A number of things that he does in these last few chapters, I hadn't ever noticed it before, but I have a red letter edition, and this is one of the sections between about chapters 14 through, at least middle of 18 and so forth. There's a lot of red in there, a lot of Jesus talking. A lot of it is in parables. But here in Luke 17, first couple of verses, through verse 10 really, they're not really parables, they're just teachings. They're just things that he says for the disciples to know. And today we just want to reflect on them, believe them, and live by them. We begin with his discussion of temptations. Every time I read this section here, temptations are sure to come, one of the things that comes to my mind is a statement made by Ben Franklin. Ben Franklin said, "In this world, nothing can be said to be certain except death and taxes." You may be familiar with that statement in its various forms, especially around tax time. We always think about that. Well, Jesus kind of adds to that. Temptations are sure to come. Temptations are simply a part of the sinful environment in which we live. And although the Lord's Prayer asks God to lead us away from those things, we will always have sin and conflict to deal with in this life. It is an unfortunate reality of sin. If your expectations of life are a life free from worry and conflict, or if you keep hoping that such a time is sort of just around the corner, a kind of happy days are here again type of thing, your expectations are simply not realistic. And maybe part of the problem we have is what Jesus is trying to say to us here is have some realistic expectations about what's going on in this life. A realistic expectations would be to realize that sin is present. Temptations are sure to come. In this particular passage, Jesus emphasizes the perpetrators of such temptations. He says, "Woe to the one through whom they come." Punishment for tempting someone is pretty severe. The image Jesus gives of throwing someone overboard in a deep sea with a millstone tied around his neck is quite graphic, is it not? And Jesus says in verse 3 of this, "Beware, be on your guard, watch yourselves, pay attention to yourselves." These are all translations of what we see here in chapter 17 and verse 3. And it's a statement that is often, it resurfaces over and over again in the New Testament. It resurfaces by Jesus himself in Luke 21 and 34. I believe in Peter. Peter even says, "Beware. Satan is tempting. Satan is walking around like a lion waiting to devour people." So the comment that Jesus makes here is just be on your guard. Be alert. And immediately Jesus here tells us how to deal with those who sin against us. Maybe one of the real problems that we have, along with ourselves being tempted, is how we feel when someone sins against us. Rebuke and forgive. Maybe the reminder there is that forgiveness is always to be the response to those who sin against us. It is the response that God always gives to us. If a person comes to you 7 times and each time says, "Forgive me," we are bound by what God says and by what God himself does to forgive. Temptation, sin, and conflict find their only proper resolution in the mercy of God. Let's stand together and sing song number 586. If the first section of this, what we're dealing with today, is a section that suggests we should have realistic expectations, I think this one says raise your expectations, at least about your faith and about what your faith can do for you. I often wonder what prompted the disciples to make the statement, increase our faith. Did they just see all the things Jesus was doing and wonder how he could do it? Did they look at their lives and say, I don't know how I'm going to get through this life. I don't know how I'm going to have the strength to do that. Is it because of the teaching he has just given them? How am I supposed to forgive somebody as many as 7 times in a single day? Maybe they think that would require an enormous amount of faith. It is, in fact, a universal challenge for all of us, isn't it? Not only to forgive, but to have the kind of faith that does all these things. It's interesting that Jesus doesn't really grant their request. He doesn't tell them how to increase their faith. But he does kind of tell them what to aim for. And I've often looked at this passage and I've just gone, you know, I still don't get how to have more faith. I still feel like at times I don't have the kind of faith that can uproot a tree. Is he suggesting here that their faith is small and thus chastising them for the smallness of it? Is he telling them to raise their expectations? Well, I think the answer, at least to the second question, is yes, raise your expectations. The task of being faithful does seem daunting at times, but how much faith does he tell them they need? When they say increase our faith, he says, you know, basically, you really don't need that much faith, do you? How big a faith is he saying they need? Oh, about that much. About the size of a mustard seed. Is that very big? It's not big at all. In fact, that seems to me to be the point that Jesus is trying to make here. He says you only need a really small amount of faith. You need faith the size of a seed. And maybe that's the message. Maybe the message here isn't that Jesus is chastising them. Maybe he's just letting them see, just put your faith to work. What little faith you have can do great things. And maybe you don't need to worry about doing great things. Maybe you just need to worry about having and using what faith that you do have. Maybe it's more useful and powerful than you think. And so that raising our expectations is, okay, go ahead and uproot trees. Maybe the point is just focus on using the faith that you have. You only need a little teeny seed's worth for it to do something. You don't need to increase it, just put it to work. You don't need to stand this time, but let's sing this time song number 540. If in the first section Jesus tells us to have realistic expectations, and in the second he says to raise your expectations, in the third he says lower your expectations. Have realistic expectations about what's going to happen in this life. Sin is present. Raise your expectations about what faith can do. Lower your expectations about who you are and what you are. In this passage, we read and perhaps are reminded that the servant's work is kind of never done. He comes in from the field and he's still not through. He doesn't get to sit down and enjoy his dinner. He's got to serve the dinner to his master before he gets a chance to eat. And Jesus says to us, does the servant get thanked for doing his duty? No. He doesn't get thanked. That's what he's supposed to do. He is a servant. In fact, the word here, a footnote, uses the word bondservant, which is, I don't know if it's another level down, but it's one that he just doesn't have any choice at all as to what he does. He is sort of enslaved, in a way, to his master. He's got to do what the master says. He has nothing else he can do. Likewise, you see, I think Jesus is trying to tell us, you know, we're really just unworthy servants. And maybe that's the expectation we need to keep in mind. There's a certain humility that's bred by that notion when we say to ourselves, we're really unworthy servants. Now, I believe Paul, in the book of Romans, says something that's perfectly consistent with this whole notion of us being unworthy servants, or I should say, at least having an idea of ourselves, having the proper perspective on who we are. Paul says, "For by the grace given to me, I say to everyone among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think with sober judgment, each according to the measure of faith that God has assigned." Doing our duty exercising what God has given to us really is no cause for any sense of pride. We're saved by grace, not by our works. Paul says, lest any man should boast. Nobody can boast before God that I've done more, I've done better, I'm more equipped, I'm better equipped than somebody else. I have better gifts than somebody else. That's absolutely and so totally wrong. It's just almost not worth mentioning, but it is what sometimes people get to feeling like. You know, and if you think about it, it's kind of comforting to know that I'm not, it's not incumbent upon me to climb some ladder of success, to sort of, you know, succeed at accomplishing a certain thing before I get to another level of spiritual attainment. I'm just a servant doing what I'm told. It's almost a relief that I don't have to attain to this level, get some certificate before I can move on to the next level, to sort of get into the inner workings of God's church. I'm just a servant doing what I'm told to do. And so I think this passage is kind of saying to us, let's strive simply to do what we're told and let God decide the rest. Humility is never out of place in the Christian community. Let's stand together and we'll sing our final song, number 552.